What is up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Rookies. I have taken a bit of a break from the podcasting just because there isn't a ton of paintball going on right now with the state of things. There is, you know, the ultimate shootout going on Go Sports down in Texas. That's pretty fun to watch. I've been tuning into those. If you haven't, I would definitely check that out. And then about 2 weeks ago, Columbus Level won the MSXL Open Division that consisted of us, NRG. It was two pro teams there. There were three semi-pro teams, CEP, NRG, semi-pro, and Struggle, and then a couple divisional teams as well. Super well-run event down there at Paintball Asylum in the MSXL. It's a great series. The next one is actually going to be next weekend at Level Up Sports. So if you haven't signed up, I believe you have until Monday to do so. So definitely get a team in. It's going to be a great time. It's going to be, you know, Panda runs it well. Level Up's a great facility. This episode is with my friend Neil. He is with the Droogs. The Droogs recently went pro in Europe, even though there have been zero pro events with the state of things. So we talked through a whole bunch of topics. We talk about obviously NXL Paintball. He works for Lux, DLX as well. He's an industry guy, so that's a bit of an interesting perspective, I think, from his side of things in Europe, working, for DLX. We talk coronavirus, how the U.S. is handling it, how Europe handled it. He's in Belgium. So, just kind of different perspectives. I think it's pretty interesting to kind of get the view of somebody who's across the pond, even though he hasn't played any pro paintball this year, but that's all right. Shout out to all of our sponsors. We got Die, Level Up, Ninja, Valken, everyone just kind of helping us out. New Balance, appreciate all you guys. We actually just got our custom New Balance gear in last week. So if we ever get to another event, you'll see us wearing that. Be wearing mine next weekend in the MSXL. So stop by and say hi. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. And we are live. Neil, what's going on?
How you doing, Justin?
Doing well, man. How are things in Europe right now?
I guess it's safe to say that we're doing okay with the coronavirus. I mean, comparing ourselves to the U.S., I think we're doing a lot better. I mean, we're down over here in Belgium, which was the peak country in March, I think. We are down to 80 cases per day, which is a pretty good number. So, nice. I think in the U.S., it's a bit... Because my parents live there.
Okay, I was going to say, because when I was with you in Paris, I thought you had a house, very close
to
the
country. We do, yeah. Okay, that makes sense. So this is a funny thing. I like to think I live everywhere in Europe.
Okay.
playing for a team in Germany, living in Belgium. I'm not home that often, and I spend. Right. I think I go to the UK like six times a year easily. A couple times France in between that, and then there's a couple practices in Germany. So I'm as European as it gets, really.
Gotcha. Is it really easy? I mean, right now it might not be as easy, but it's pretty easy to just travel between countries. Is that right? You can literally just drive.
Yes, I can literally just drive. And with a European passport in the Schengen zone, there's no borders. So you can literally just drive. It's you cross the street. So you can go anywhere you want. Yeah. And I mean, Belgium's in the middle of Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Germany. I live exactly 3 hours from each major European capital. I live 2.5 hours from Amsterdam. I think if I do 2.5 hours, I get in London. I got to take a boat though, 3 hours to Paris, 3 hours to Cologne, 5 to Frankfurt. So it's quite easy for me to get anywhere I want without actually having to fly. It's a benefit for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really convenient for paintball.
Yes, because I'm dead in the middle of everything good going on as well. If I go to France, you got the Paris Camp Carnage guys. In Belgium, we got Breakout Spa. This weekend, we're going to Germany to do a double weekend at the, what is that place called? The GI Arena in Solms, which is where the DPL is being played with all those dudes out there. So you get a really good mix of all the different playing styles that there are to find, because there really are. I don't know how you guys experience that when you come to Europe, but we, like, I can tell the difference between like a German player or like a French player or a UK player. I can easily, you know, pinpoint where they have learned their trade, you know?
Really?
Yes, there's
that's interesting.
Yeah, there's definitely different styles. I don't know how that stuff is going down in the US. I haven't played there enough to be able to pinpoint it down to the different styles, but yeah, I mean, the French have their way of coding and working with the layouts, and then the Germans have a different style of play, I would even say, than the teams in the UK. Yeah, I mean, I can't exactly like explain it. I'd have to show it with video evidence.
I know what you mean. That's kind of how the states are too. There's, you know, people on the West Coast and East Coast and South. They all have different codes. So like, I think you can kind of tell where they're from based on what you know language they're using on the field, stuff like that. What codes? Because it seems that, you know, whatever region or whatever home field you come from, that's
You adopt styles, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So the luck I have is I'm in the center of all of this. So I get to, you know, I get the benefits of, I get the best out of everything, and I get to work with every single different thing. So especially in Europe, when you're playing used to be playing the Millennium Series, now in XL, when you're facing one of those teams from those different countries, you can actually, you know, pick on their codes and stuff like that, which makes it very convenient. If you're, you know, in a center bunker, somebody yells out the code, you're like, okay, they know I'm here, and you work from there.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, I remember when I played with, you coach, when I played on the Drugs D2, there were some Germans on the team, and they would yell codes, but they were yelling in German sometimes. And I'm like, what the heck are these guys talking about? But yeah, it's pretty cool, all the different languages. So the Drugs are from Germany. The team is pretty diverse, at least when I played that event. But what's like the core team there in Germany? Is that like the D1 team?
So for the 2020 season, or whatever was supposed to be the 2020 season, right? We've obviously had the opportunity to take a pro spot over here in Europe, yeah, which is a different story.
Congrats. Though there hasn't been a single event, still congrats.
Exactly. I mean, you know, what do you know, pro, right? Yeah. I hate the word pro too. But yeah, so we've kind of rebooted the German side of things, I would say. So essentially, we picked up a spot in the DPL. In Bundesliga 2, because you gotta fight your way up there, and we've had the opportunity to be able to snatch one of those, and then those guys are going to be playing the SPL in the NXL, so semi-pro, okay. D1, which you guys want to call it. And then I would like to say it's a mix, actually, like the pro team. There's it's like the very best of certain different areas in Europe. The people that really didn't have a team that kind of were a Drug got picked up for that, and then we mixed it with, you know, a couple of the the Northeast guys. There's a couple of big names on there, there's a couple of well-known people, you know. It's definitely, this season is definitely going to, if anything happens, it's definitely going to be a challenge for sure.
Yeah,
because we don't get that. You know, we don't get those weekends that we come over, we fly out, stay there for two days, practice with each other. We try to keep those two events, but yeah, I mean, doesn't really make it easier. My original plan this year was to head out to World Cup for a month and then just spend time with everybody over there and then just grind it out for a month, which, you know, it's not easy, but it helps because not everybody gets to do that.
Oh yeah,
but the problem right now is, with the way that COVID's developing in Florida, I don't really see that happening either as of now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I sent you that meme earlier. It's, you know, they keep breaking their own record. It's like number one spot, Florida. The last number one spot was also Florida. It's a daily thing.
Yeah. Florida, man, is raging.
Yeah. It's tough because Florida is obviously a huge tourist state. So if you walk down the people in New York, well, anyone with money probably has a home in Florida or can vacation in Florida. A lot of people have friends and family in Florida. So all these people are going to be traveling to Florida because they're like, well, everything here is closed. They're not closed. I'm just going to go there. So you have a massive influx of people to that one location. And then also Florida's just crazy. It's its own place. You know, you could probably chop it off from America and it'd be, you know, its own country, but it's, you know, a petri dish. There's a lot going on, a lot of people traveling in and out. So it's no surprise that the cases are on the rise consistently.
Yeah. And I mean, the way I see it as an outsider, as a European, this whole thing has been played out as a political game, to say the least, right?
Is that how it is in Europe as well as America?
No.
It's America for sure.
No, not at all. Okay. I mean, there's certain things that, you know, get played out as political for sure. Like I would like to say the way certain tasks in the emergency corona governments are being played out is political, yes. But the general consensus here, I mean, not to shit on any Americans, but I think the people here are a little bit more, let's say, you know, they like to cooperate a lot more. It's not like, oh, you're taking away our freedom. You know, we're going to, there's more of a humane form to, you know, if I might get sick, I might infect my, you know, my peers, and that's not good for me in the long run. So, and in America, it's just like the way I see it, it's just like, oh, well, you know, might live free or die tomorrow, or better do that, you know, something like that.
And that's no joke. That's a state motto in New Hampshire. The motto is live free or die. It's on their license plates.
Well, okay. Fact. Did not know that.
Yeah.
I mean, you get the idea, right? If there's 100 million people that run away with that, that run free with that motto, stuff's not going to disappear. This is not a joke. I must say I was a little bit skeptical towards it, you know, in the beginning, but you know, we've all seen it over the months, the amount of deaths, this is real. You know, it's, I don't know. I mean, it's getting wild out there. It's, everybody's kind of doing their own little thing. Asia's doing better. There's a couple of countries that are having second waves, but yeah, I mean, it's getting in Europe in general, it is getting better. I think the big reason for that is mainly because we've closed all our borders internally and externally. So we've closed Europe to Europe itself, and then we've closed Europe to the outside. So I think as of 1st of July, we can actually start traveling free within side of Europe again, which is nice, because it's going to save those touristy spots, right? Like Greece or Spain, which were hit pretty hard. But yeah, I don't see it going well in the U.S.
No. Well, it's funny. I think I might have an opposite viewpoint. So when the lockdown started, you said you were kind of against it. I was for it. I was totally pro lockdown initially. And as it's gone on, I've become pretty anti-lockdown, because I think the measures they were taking, they're inconsistent. So my thing is, if you're going to do it consistently. Like, so I've been on a couple planes recently, and in the lobby of the airport, I could buy a Dunkin' Donuts coffee and carry it onto the plane. However, on the actual airplane, they could not serve me. Same brand of coffee, Dunkin' Donuts. They couldn't serve it to me.
Yeah, which is
on
the bullshit.
Plane. And I'm like, what the heck's the difference? But they can hand me a bottle of water, but they can't hand me a Coca-Cola. I'm like,
yeah, what? I mean, I think this is looking at it from that perspective, for sure. I totally agree with you. Like, they'll serve you water on the airplane, but they won't serve you a beer. I mean, that's just class A bullshit. I'll say it how it is.
And it hurts the airlines. Now the airline is not making my, you know, $8. I was going to buy that beer, and now you're not allowing me to. So now the airline is losing money.
It hurts their own economy, really.
And it doesn't make any sense.
The problem is there wasn't really a set plan for this whole scenario.
Right.
Which made – I think some countries kind of dwelled on the edge of like, hey, we're going to try this or we're going to try that. But it wasn't really – there was no straight line in how to do things. I agree. I mean, going anti-lockdown is not a solution for sure. I think Europe shows that now, that it was good. The problem is if you go lock – I think this could have been all over if we went full lockdown straight away.
Didn't not Amsterdam, one of the islands, New Zealand maybe? Didn't they do that?
Yes, New Zealand went full lockdown. But the problem, you got to look at it from a demographic perspective as well, right? So how many people are in New Zealand? Like 10 million or something like that? Like very few
people.
It's
like less than Boston, basically.
Yeah, there's like very, very few people. So, and the thing is, it's an island. So it's easy to just, you know, you shut off air traffic and you shut off sea traffic and that's it.
Right.
You got your own little quarantine. Good. But in Europe, there's a... You know, there's a and same goes in the U.S. There's a lot of areas that are super densely populated, and you know, it's just some of these things they're virtually impossible. Like even in Europe, I could still drive around, do certain things, but there were major checkpoints on every road,
mm-hmm.
and I would have to justify, you know, me being outside, obviously doing my work,
right?
But you know, I haven't been able to drive to my parents for like the last 3 months across the border in France. And it's not, like, they only live 2.5 hours away. So it seems kind of crazy. But it's reality, you know, that's what the lockdown is for, to be fair.
Yeah. I mean, I think in Europe, I don't know how it was nationwide, but I had heard that the people that were forced out of work, they were given 80% of their pay by the government.
Yes. So you guys had stimulus check, right?
Yeah, for like $1,200, which depending on where you live, I mean, that's not even 1 month's rent in Boston for a lot of people. So,
see, and I hate to be the devil's advocate here, but this is where social systems really do work. And I know there's going to be people listening to the podcast who are going to be like, oh, fuck you, you stupid ass European. You don't know shit.
But it's going to be, I should have prefaced, it might be a controversial episode.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what do I know, right? But like, it's if you like, I've read this thing of what's her name, Amanda Setzer, online last night, where she said, like, look, I got laid off from my job, and now to be able to keep healthcare, I got to pay what was it, like $1,000 a month? I mean, would you believe me if I told you that my entire healthcare to be insured up to like $2.5 million cost me €640 a year?
That's pretty crazy.
I mean, yeah. So this alone kind of proves that if everybody buys into it, and I mean by everybody, I literally mean everybody. If everybody buys into it, it does work. The thing is, it's very heavily regulated. So you can't go in for, like, let's say teeth are a different system. You know, like if you had a cavity in your teeth, in your tooth, and you want to get that plugged, obviously they're going to be like, was this here prior to you being insured, or was this not? Or like, could this have been your own fault because you had a bad care for it? But like, let's say you fall off the stairs and you break your legs, you're going to be fully covered.
Right.
And I could not imagine this happening to somebody in the US and them getting out of it, like, financially, I wouldn't say better, but unharmed.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah, it's definitely a different system here.
Yeah. I think if
the US would have done like that 80% thing, there'd be less.
People would be more compliant, first of all.
That's my thing. So, like, I like to think, you know, I'm pretty libertarian, like, you know, free market and then socially liberal and things like that. But if you're going to force people out of work,
give them an option.
You know, they're not being lazy.
Yeah.
You're telling them they can't work.
Exactly. A lot of, I mean, I totally understand the perspective of people in America that just say, like, you know, we can't stay home because if we don't go to work, we won't make any money and we won't have any food when this ends. I totally get that, you know, but this is once again where it comes to politics. If you keep choosing shitty people that work for, you know, the wealthy people, and to make them more wealthy, there's, you know, essentially you're getting rid of your middle class. That's what's going on right there.
Yeah, really interesting show on Netflix right now called Dirty Money. If anyone's heard of it, I would definitely check it out. It goes into a lot of issues with, I think, just, you know, greed and corporate greed and things like that. It's really interesting, I think. Watched a couple episodes of it so far.
And it goes so far. Yeah, I've seen it.
Yeah, it goes pretty deep. Yeah, sweet. But so kind of, I guess you work for Lux. We'll kind of transition here because we could probably talk
Yeah, well, I mean, we're not going to talk. We're not going to spend an hour on politics, are we?
Well, we could. I mean, people might find it interesting. I don't know if anyone cares what we think, but you know, that's.
I hope somebody finds it. Somebody listens to it and says, you know, maybe looking at it outside of the box might be, you know, interesting. Hopefully, at least.
Yeah, it's an outside of the box year. You know.
Yeah.
I'd honestly absolutely. I'd be surprised if we had World Cup at all.
I'm hoping for it though. Yeah. I mean, I went to the Las. So this is a funny another story, right? I went to the Las Vegas event. Got invited to come out there, work out there.
Yeah, and excited.
Yeah.
I didn't come specifically for you, but I stopped by your booth.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. No, but yeah, so, and I'm sitting on the plane to head back home, and two people get kicked off, and I land here, I think, the Wednesday, and the Wednesday they've announced on the national news, like, hey, we're going on a lockdown for 3 months. Brace yourselves. And I'm like,
what?
What do you
mean kicked off the plane? They were coming from Vegas to Belgium, and they weren't allowed to go?
So I was sitting on a connection flight from San Francisco to Zurich to Switzerland, and these two people showed up, and they had signs of fever. Like one guy was like sweat Ooh. Dripping off his face. Jeez. And then the second guy was just coughing like a madman, right? And this is like literally three rows in front of me, and they're both sitting right next to each other. All of a sudden, Captain walks in and he's like, look, I hate to be the bringer of bad news, but I've made the call, and you both have to leave the plane because we won't take any risks. And I think they said a medical team or something is waiting on the outside, and they had to get tested before they were cleared to fly again. Literally, I land Wednesday. Friday, everything in Europe goes on a lockdown. So I don't even know how those dudes ever got home. You know, imagine being stuck in a country like that for 3 months.
Yeah, in San Francisco, that's a terrible place to be stuck.
I mean, yeah, but like, you're not going to, it comes back to the story, like, you're not going to work.
And you're no, not I know. Yeah, money. That is rough. That's especially if you like aren't fluent in English, possibly. I mean, or like, I don't know, you don't have enough American currency. You don't have friends and family there you can stay with. If you had to shell out for a hotel or an Airbnb for three months, that's very expensive.
I mean, you better have good insurance. And the thing is, like, most insurances don't cover pandemics, too. So,
no, I mean, yeah, this is unprecedented. So, but that's really wild. I remember
I was a couple weeks sweating it. Vegas. I was sweating it when I saw the captain walk. Yeah. I was like, holy shit, he's not going to pull me, is he? He walks up and he pulls the two dudes like three rows in front of me. I'm like, oh, I'm going home.
I didn't know they could do that. That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it, so.
Yeah, I believe you. I totally believe
you. I've never heard that. I know they could refuse people to board. I didn't know they pulled people off of planes for stuff like that, but I guess they must have had a good reason, you know? Plus, it's like, it's Swiss air. The Swiss are super strict on enforcing their little rules and stuff. It's a German part they have, so.
I mean, it makes sense. I mean, because Sweden's very, very small, and you can't totally, like, quarantine. It looks like it kind of connects to obviously Norway,
Switzerland.
Sorry.
Yeah, but it's in the mountains, so.
Yeah, I got a map pulled up of the UK, so I know what you're talking about when you're talking about all these countries.
Yeah, you're probably zooming in. And you're like, these countries are smaller than like the village I live in.
Oh yeah, they're definitely smaller than some states. Some of these countries, but you know, it's cool. It's interesting. I'd like to get back to Europe. I was talking to some guys about, I was trying to play the Amsterdam event for the NHL, but I don't know if that'll happen.
I mean, to hindsight, I think it's good that you didn't come. Did you see the rain that dropped on Amsterdam for like the week? I still remember that. I flew back from the UK just to switch my bags at the airport to drive straight to Amsterdam, right? We set up the booth on a Tuesday. It's been 28 degrees Celsius. What is that, like? 80 something Fahrenheit. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. So that, like that, all week, Tuesday, we set up the booth. We finish the internals of the booth and it literally starts dripping. And I'm like, uh oh. Next hour, it starts flooding. And I'm like, okay, let's hope this goes away. And it literally rained for the rest of the week.
Jeez. Yeah. The mud looked horrible.
It was like, I think you guys had, was it Dallas Mudfest?
Yeah, that's every year.
I you know, I'll say it, but I think Amsterdam was worse.
Oh, it looked way worse. It looked way worse.
Because it never stopped raining. Like, if the mud dries out, okay, that's one thing. But if it just keeps raining, it was so slippery. There's still this one picture of us playing the Amsterdam finals, that one. I think Buckley dove into the corner or into the, yeah, that's right, into the snake. And his gun got completely submerged.
Oh, no.
Never made it out.
Oh, no, he was stuck in the ground?
Yeah, so it was a 3-on-2. And he just submerged his gun into diving into the snake, and he came out with it, and it just looked like it was not going to do anything for the rest of its life.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough. Yeah. Did you guys win that event, or did you get second?
So we got beat. I'll still say it. If we wouldn't have lost his gun in that situation, I'm pretty sure we could have pulled out 2 points there.
Yeah.
Because we had the momentum. But then, I mean, that team that we were playing against was it like the U19 team or something from Team USA or something?
Okay.
It was like a mix of that with some other guys, and they were coached by Greg Paul. And I have to say, like, you could literally tell what good coaching did that event.
Oh, I believe it.
Yeah, I mean, and I was...
Rain's also an equalizer, I think. I hate playing in the rain.
I mean, you can't hit breakout shots if it's raining.
No.
There's no such thing. There's no such thing.
You can cheat way easier. Like, if you get hit and you're sliding, it's like you can't stop and, like, check it. You're literally sliding through a puddle of mud. That hit's gone.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say it again. Like, I've been telling it to my guys. Like, that event, like, it really didn't matter if we won or lost. I mean, we made it that far in the tournament. Yeah. I think everybody was content that we've just, you know, tough muttered it.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, to lose in a way like that was just, I didn't really make a big deal out of it. It was very irrelevant. It's you don't really play paintball, you know. You're just dealing with the piles of mud.
Yeah, 100%. I was hoping to get there this year too, but that's what I'm saying. I don't think the Amsterdam event will happen this year, if any NXLs happen this year.
Yeah, so dwelling off back to the NXL, causing a little controversy is Tom Cole did a little podcast. Well, it wasn't a podcast. It was a live show on the NXL. Was it on NXL page?
Yeah.
Which randomly got deleted the day after, a couple of hours later. Yeah, so you can't find it anywhere anymore. So he's done a live show where he said that they still want to do Spain in, I think, was it the 10th of October? I got to check my calendar. Which I find very, very surprising, right? So the way that we experience the NXL in Europe, the NXL is a little, let's say, slowly organized. And I guess that's mainly due to the fact that they have to rely on people across the pond in Europe. And then there's all that email traffic, stuff getting lost in communication, language barriers. And then, you know, it's, if you don't do it yourself, you can't do it best. Right.
Right.
But the thing is, I don't think they should be forcing, first of all, for multiple reasons. First of all, forcing an NXL after you've haven't really had a season. What's the point of having a one event season? First of all,
yeah.
Second of all, half the people still can't fly in. It's still an issue where, you know, like, you guys are going to be banned from Europe for a long time. I can tell you that.
Hopefully not too long.
Yeah. I mean, this is what happens when the people do what they do, right? So that there's that. So I wonder how they're going to even do that, because I don't even see the NXL staff flying into Spain right now. Third of all, Spain was like the first hotbed of coronavirus. Why would you want to go there? Fourth of all, we lost 2 guns the year that we actually went to Spain.
Yeah, and, I think
Pat O'Brien lost his CS2, his elevation one, his first pro gun. It's probably a poor little Pablo in Spain shooting with that thing right now in his backyard because the customs sees it. And then George Langley lost Sam G's gun. So He also got that snatched away by customs, even though we did fill in the paperwork and the whole deal and all that stuff. But it's like,
yeah, that seems like a mess over there.
It's like, oh, you have to declare all your guns, and then have to, like, originally they did it as first event, and now if they do it in October, it's still going to be first event. You have to declare all your team serial numbers from your guns to the, you know, to the NXL, which in their term, I trust that they will share it with the Spanish government, which theoretically leaves us out of trouble, which was not the way it went down.
Right.
So there's that, which just makes it like a whole, like, there's a whole lot of reasons adding up to why I personally believe Spain shouldn't be a thing. The way they could probably do it better right now is just sack off NXL Europe for this year, save their money, don't go through all the trouble of actually getting it organized. I understand that people want to have a paintball event, but just, let's just agree that 2020 really is null.
Yeah.
in whatever way you want to put it. And let's just focus all the efforts on 2021 and start with a bang. Like, people in Europe like to get organized early. We'd like to have that info like around World Cup. So there's no point, which the NXL have done in the past, starting to share info like halfway through January, I think, or February maybe even, because they were super late. And I think that's pissed off a lot of people over here that are quite held back to doing a lot of things with the NXL, because they just don't have that confidence in it anymore. And personally, right. I'll take my hat off to Tom Cole. He's for the guns that we lost, he's reimbursed us, because he's like, look, I'm inviting you guys to come out play here, and this is our responsibility. If we let you guys do all the necessities and they still take away your guns, like, this is on us. My hat goes off to that. I have to say again, the NXL is a much better league than the Millennium ever has been. In my eyes, in terms of being customer orientated, in terms of, you know, the actual product they put down. But I think there's a lot of people that still don't give it enough credit for what it is.
I'll screw with that.
It's really hard. It must be really hard to put something together like what an NXL is. And then that's why I also think, like, they should just put their effort into 2021 and not force another, you know, on top of all the gun issues and Spain being just a shitty paintball country, because there's, let's be honest, there's no paintball in Spain. It's way too hot.
Yeah, what pro teams are even there?
I mean, 5-star, but the, I mean, this is going to sound like me talking shit, but is 5-star really a pro team? Like,
it's, I don't know, man.
These guys have 3, maybe 4 homegrown players, and the rest of them consisted out of, I wouldn't say guests, but like basically pros from other teams they got through their sponsorship. And coming out of my mouth, this might sound wrong or offensive to some people, because this is essentially what we have done for quite a while, but in a different way, in the way that the people that came and played out with us, they stayed with us and they kept growing throughout the years with the same team.
Yeah.
Whereas 5-star, they literally had those 3-4 Spanish dudes, and they've had, you know, guests from pro teams like back in the Millennium days for the last X amount of years. And what happens is, like, with these new regulations that that they had, that you couldn't, what was it, one American pro per roster or something like that?
Yeah, I think it's like one or two now.
I don't even know what those guys are going to do. So I don't even know if 5-star is going to be a thing.
Yeah.
Like, how are they going to live?
Good point.
Are they just going to pay a bunch of semi-pro people and then, I don't know, like, ruin semi-pro dudes essentially by giving them money to come play pro in Europe? Like, I don't see that as
semi-pro Americans.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see that as a good strategy to move forward with that, because essentially, like, you ruin a bunch of semi-pro dudes by just making them into little turds by paying them money to do the thing that you really can't do, because you don't have, or you don't invest your time or funds or money into having your own players.
Yeah, there's got to be like at least 3 other players in the whole, you know, country of Spain that know how to play paintball.
So because we got off on a tangent, right? Which I keep doing.
That's all right. Got all day, man.
Actually, I have to about 4:15, but that's all right.
No pressure, right? So to go back, there's like one pro team in Spain, and I think their local league has like, what, 8 teams? Okay. The only reason why we would, as Europeans, would want to go to Spain is because Spain is always warm. It's essentially like early, like Florida, you could still go there in the winter and it'd still be like 26 Celsius, like lower 70s for you guys. Yeah. I mean, that's doable paintball weather, right? It's not freezing.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
It's the paint's not going to be shitty. It's not going to be too warm. And, you know, that's why they want to go to Spain. And it's actually like a holiday destination, so it's cheap. But should we really be going to a location like that, considering all the points that I've just summed up? I don't really think that's a smart idea. So
yeah.
And plus, I still don't know if all the governments will allow mass events like this. From the way Tom Cole sounded, he was very, very confident. But I don't see it.
I think it's the confidence that people want to hear. He's like confident because like people need to hear that. People need to hear good news. People need to hear I'm doing everything I can. And I truly believe he is doing everything he can. No one said him not to, you know, why would he not want to have these events? But there's so much right now out of his control that he might do everything he can. He might work 10-hour days, but like,
yeah,
the rules are the rules, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, if everything is out of your control, should you really be willing to gamble? Because what I think is going to happen, right, is if he actually gets Spain pulled off, I think there's going to be a lot of European teams that are going to be hesitant to buy into the story. And I think that's going to backfire on them. And I don't think it's a smart move.
Yeah. It's tough. I'm kind of worried about that. Not so much with World Cup in terms of people scared to travel.
Yeah.
I think all the American teams will still be like, yeah, let's play some paintball. Like, let's do it. But I do think that the economic hit we've taken here in America will hurt the divisional scene, which sucks because I've said a couple times the NXL was, you know, getting huge. There were tons of divisional teams. The events were getting bigger and bigger and better, in my opinion, over the years. And, you know, they finally moved Texas. We're going to go to Austin instead of Dallas. So they were, you know, making some changes.
Austin's a good town, I hear.
Yeah, I've been there once. It's a great time.
That's like a student, like a uni or college place?
Yep. Yeah. So University of Austin or Texas Austin, I think it's called Austin, Texas. I don't know. But so there were a lot of good things going on with the NXL this year. And I'm worried that a lot of divisional teams and maybe even some pro teams just won't be able to return. And we'll kind of obviously we won't know till next year, really what's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, the financial situation is obviously different, right? Like, as you've said before, the people that over here in Europe didn't work, they still got 80% of their wage in most countries, right? Whereas in the US, you guys didn't get shit. You got you got the little Trumpy check there in the mailbox, but that didn't really do anything for anybody. So
a lot of people bought new paintball guns. The BST was popping.
Yeah, I saw that. Crazy. Yeah, stimulus.
Crazy,
yeah, I saw that. But so the way I think in Europe, how it's going to work is people have not had, like, we've been playing for 5 weeks straight again now. That being said, some states in the US can't really do that. The way in Europe, as I see it now, is it's not like the 2008 crisis where, you know, people just didn't have any money with the housing crisis. It's just like something's been taken away from us for 3 months, the very thing that we love the most, right? So I think a lot of people are like, oh, we can go again, so we're going to go at it full tilt, like full send, right?
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, you know, we have no money or interest or blah, blah, blah. It's just like, you know, people want the thing that they can't get the most. So I think it's going to be like that. I can't speak for the US though.
I think that's how it is here too. I mean, I took my dog to the beach the other night and I couldn't even walk onto the beach. It was so crowded.
I mean,
that's how it is here.
Time's going to tell. I don't know. I mean, I think if World Cup would actually happen, it would be one of the biggest ones that has ever taken place if Florida was not in such a bad state where it is right now. Because, you know, everybody saved their money. Nobody's played no tournaments nowhere. Everybody's like, oh, World Cup, you know, let's just live towards that. Let's just do that. And I think this could have been the biggest one that it's you know, it has ever been. I think last year we broke a record with World Cup.
Yep.
I think it would have completely smashed it. I think it would have completely smashed it. But yeah, I mean, time will tell. I'm hoping for it so I can come back to your precious land, invade it.
Yeah. So it's funny, actually, a level up. They're having to put out 2 X-Ball fields this weekend because there are so many players there last weekend that there wasn't enough fields. So they put up an additional speedball field, which is pretty sweet to see.
That's good for Dave. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We got the MSXL going down in 2 weeks.
Oh, that's right.
That'll be, yeah. I'll be down there. I'll be coaching a Division IV X-Ball team. So it'll be a good time.
You should be reffing, Justin. earning those boxes of paint.
I'm done reffing. I reffed last year. I reffed.
We've all done that at one point in our career, right?
Right. You have to. You gotta. You have earn to, your stripes.
You have to eat shit to earn your stripes. And exactly.
And it helps you. I think reffing helps you emphasize with the refs who are on the field. Like, you kind of know what they're going through. You've been there. You understand that
it gives you a different perspective. It gives you respect, first of all, because you embrace the suck first that, and you respect the people that can embrace the suck, which is standing out there all day. And especially in those lower divisions, we all know you get shot 100 freaking times.
Way more than the higher divisions, because they're shooting at anything that moves. And their paint's not straight. When they snap out, that ball's not where they want it. That ball's in the net.
It's going to hit you straight into the neck.
Oh, yeah.
Instead of your chest.
Yeah, it's – ref and divisionals is very difficult, especially, I mean, in the NXL and the regional leagues. It's just such long days. You know, they're 8 to 10 – they're 8-hour days, normal, but, like, you're not really getting a lot of breaks. It's hot. Everyone hates you. The 10-hour days to 12-hour days, you're up there. The sun comes up, you're there till the sun goes down, you know, and it's
What is the rate that refs get paid in the U.S.? I have no clue.
So it probably varies, but I would say like a fresh referee probably gets $150 if they ref a regional. And I think that's what they started in the NXL, actually. So
that is actually not too bad.
No, it's not bad. But when you break it down hourly, it could be quite poor. But I think the NXL, actually, Tom Cole was telling me they were having a problem with a lot of the way they did in the PSP, right, was that if you ref, you know, more than one event or like more than 1 year.
It's like a contingency. Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess they went with that same model with the NXL. So they're like, well, that's the refing model. We're going to keep that model. But now they're experiencing that so many refs are coming back that they're having to pay the refs more and more money each time. I don't know if any of the refs could confirm this for me, but that's what I was told. And they come back because all their friends are doing it. You know, Tom's like, why do you guys do this? He's like, well, our friends are doing it, so we're going to keep doing it. You know, they all come and hang out. Just like we go to play, so they come with all their friends.
Martin Tutsu, so he's a Slovakian guy. He goes over to every US NXL to ref. And apparently those guys make really good money, especially for the Slovakian people. I think he's like a semi-pro ref or something like that. I have no clue. I could be, you know, talking out of my neck. Yeah, I mean, apparently those guys get paid really good money, especially for the Eastern European people. Like, in for example, like, I think 300 or 400 euros in Poland is like a monthly wage, which is nothing. Jeez. So those dudes get serious good money to have a blast getting shot to shit all weekend in the United States. So those dudes just come out there for a week. They ref, they get paid good money, and then they go on a holiday.
Yeah, that's a great reason to do it. I mean, I think that's what a lot of people do. If you like look at Vegas, like, okay, I'll go work 3 days, but at night I can go out with all my friends, and I'm going to take the money that they give me from working all day and just blow it at the casino or the bar or the club.
Vegas then you're getting is really a paid good location. Vacation.
Vegas I love really, Vegas.
I like that. Because especially because there's so much things to do.
Yep.
Like the big issue that I feel that we have in Europe right now is we have good venues like the Chantilly one.
Yeah, but that's a sick venue.
But there's absolutely nothing in the first 20 miles. You know, you can't do anything. The hotels are crap. Everybody like Bitburg, for example, like all the Germans like Bitburg. I'm going to get flamed for saying this, but Bitburg is shit.
Really?
I think it's 50 miles to the nearest city. Bitburg used to be like an army base or an air base or something like that. Damn, they even closed a strip club, which was like the last bar in that little village.
Oh, no.
From back when I started going there in 2006 or something like that to now. It's completely changed and it's not the same anymore. And it's just, you know, we go there because it's on a sports school grass field, which is really nice. But like, should that really be a reason to go out there to an NXL? I don't know. I mean, personally, for me, I like to do other things when paintball's over, and I could totally see other teams also doing the same thing. Because back in the day, people used to get, you know, if they were knocked out, they would get shit-faced in a bar somewhere. But what do you do if you're sitting, let's say, in Chantilly, Paris, in a shitty-ass hotel next to a highway where it's, like, I don't know, 20, 30 kilometers to actual Paris? Right. What are you doing? Why are you doing that? And then they wonder why there's no spectators on Sunday, because everybody just fucked off their hotel. Sorry for swearing. And then went to Paris City downtown, booked themselves a hotel there and stayed there. We did exactly the same at the Barcelona event last year. You know, why should there be an incentive to go back to the event if you can just, you know, have a blast in town? But you know, the downside is you got to book a new hotel because it's that far away. If it were like Vegas, where it's literally, I would say, a 15-20 minute drive from where we stayed.
It's very close.
It's super close and it's super convenient. And you just go right back. Like, if you got nothing to do, if you don't want to do anything else, just go back to the paintball field. It incentivizes people. Same with Amsterdam. I think Amsterdam could have potentially been the best European event if it was not for that shitty ass rain.
Yeah. Yeah, that's uncontrollable. But I was hoping to come this year, obviously, but not going to happen. But yeah, it's tough because what is the job of the NXL? Is it to put on a good paintball tournament, or is it to put on a good entertainment value where you're in a spot where you can do more than just
paintball? So here's the thing, right? In the beginning of the year, there's been a little bit of controversy where somebody said, "Oh, what is NXL really doing to grow the sport?" So here's my take on that, right? First of all, the NXL is the biggest entity that Speedball has.
Oh, yeah.
So I think they should be doing their part to grow the sport with everything around it. But I also understand that it's a business. But you can do both. You can do both just fine. You know, there shouldn't be a white line where, oh, this is pure business or this is entertainment, you know?
How do you think they could grow the sport?
NXL?
Yeah. What would that mean to you if you were in charge?
Entry fee for grandstands now.
You know, I think they were going to do that this year. I believe Tom had told me on Thursday and Friday they were piloting it this year. It was going to go at Texas. They were going to not charge on Thursdays and Friday, or Friday and Saturday, excuse me.
Fun fact, right? I have only taken a friend once in the 13 years that I've been going to international events to an international event, because people, if they want to see you do anything and they got to get into the pits, they got to pay an ID card, which costs them a shit ton of money. It's like 25 euros just to run around like with you as your friends to see how it's really going. Or if it's like grandstands, it's, what is it, like 50 for the weekend or something like that? It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, they're a little pricey. It's tough. It's because, I mean, you got to pay. Somebody has to pay to put those on.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I understand that too. But like, we're all paying that 50 bucks on the ID card. That's what I'm trying to say. Sorry. Like, why should it not be like, hey, you paid your entry, so we're going to let you have one person for free, like give you a pass to, you know, invite a buddy or something, like a buddy pass or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. They should do something like that to start with. The fact
or like
that
charge... ID could be, you know, your ticket to the grandstands, you know, if you have a player ID, you can, that's what I think.
Like that. Yeah. I mean, I understand like if you do the math, they must make a shit ton of money at World Cup for the grandstands. I totally get it. But why are we running a league that needs to make that grandstand money, first of all? I mean, why is the NXL doing that? Because I said we are running a league, but, you know, the NXL is doing that. Why is that a thing? And, you know, here it comes back to, this is entertainment, this is business. But, you know, like, how are you incentivizing people to come watch or grow or whatever you want to name it if everything has to cost money. Like you're going down that parking lot. World Cup's free parking, right? In Europe, there's a lot of places, a lot of events where they charge for the parking lot.
Really? Even just normal parking, non-VIP?
Yes. In Europe, this used to be a thing. Like if you parked on site, you'd have to pay. You had to get a car pass.
Really? With the NXL?
Yes. I think this was a thing for 1 year. I think they'd done that last year or something like that. I knew that we had one car pass per team last year, and this was not a VIP pass, FYI. So, I mean, those are like the small things that just make it. Why would you make it harder? Like, I would love to bring 20 friends and say, like, hey, just, you know, knock yourselves out. There's a beer stand over there. All those friends are going to drink beers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All those friends are going to go around and go watch the stores and see what's available. And essentially, those people that we are now scaring off with those like $10, $20, the shitty fees, I like to call them.
Yeah.
Those people are not coming because they're just like, eh, I don't know if I'm going to be into this. So I don't really know if I want to spend that $20, $30. Plus, I got to drive there. You know, that's what keeps people away.
Yeah, no, I agree with the entry fees. I was looking forward to them getting rid of those. Now that I have the
I don't think a single team would moan if they had to pay, let's say, $100 or $200 more a year on top of what they're already paying, just to allow them like a buddy pass for every player on that team for free.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just maybe. It's the way you model your business, right? I mean, right. I'm not the one to tell them how to do it, but the same thing with Go Sports. Like, why is Go Sports a thing where, you know, I understand there's a huge production of it and all that stuff, but like, why are certain things not free? It's the same thing. And I understand Go Sports, their own little entity, and they got to make money on it. To be, you know, self-sustainable, but how are we really trying to market paintball if these things aren't really covered by the major sponsors, you know?
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't really have any kind of solution to those things. It's tough, but I mean, you work for DLX and Lux. What is that like working kind of in the industry to a degree?
Interesting to say the least, because I see, so as a player / team manager / gun tech, I get to see, I wear a whole lot of hats that give me a whole lot of different perspectives in certain things, right? You know, there's the, you got to show the respect to the refs. I know what it is to build up the booth and all that stuff and go to the events 2-3 days before to make sure everything's there, you know, build it up from scratch, to make it into the show that it really is. So there are certain things, that I get to experience from a different perspective rather than a guy that would just sign up for a D5 team.
Right.
And then on top of that, there's, you know, I live in Europe and I work for this brand major player that's across the ocean. So there's, you know, being the European, living in this little European island that has its own little league going on. And then there's the bigger picture, which is, you know, everything that goes on in the US, because believe it or not, paintball is still mainly dominated by the US.
Yeah. I mean, that's why they put in those rules that only two pros can go, because I mean, the European events, they were won by like Heat, Impact, Golden State Kings, which was a mixture of Dynasty, Spica and Archie. And like, you know,
see, this is also a thing why a lot of teams stayed away out of the NXL, because they're like, why should I go pay $10,000 if I'm just going to go get Rickrolled by Golden State Kings because Mr. Givens has a shit ton of money that he wants to dump in paintball because this is his way of growing the sport. Excuse my laughing, but I find it laughable. I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's like these Americans could put the super teams together, come over, and then it's like, when's the last time, other than the Russian Legion, when's the last time a European team won a European event?
Yeah, I think the closest somebody's got was probably Breakout Spa, and those guys are probably the wealthiest team out of Europe, apart from Kiev United. You know, and this once again, it comes back to us having a little more issues with like demographics. First of all, you're very like the way your paintball story unfolds is very much dominated by your demographic. You know, this is why I'm lucky to be in the middle of all of them. But let's say you're a guy in little Ukraine, which has barely any paintball, and where, for example, like a Konstantin Fedorov, because he lives there, he teaches these kids, and then some people with money show up and make it into something better. Or you live in Norway, where you only have any like reball halls or barely any fields outside because it snows like 7 months or something a year.
Yeah, why would anyone like, live there?
How does that make it a fair playing field versus let's say like a rich team or an American team that comes over to just, you know, and you pay the same amount of money.
I mean, because America's a lot, the demographic, I would say in terms of like climate is yes. a lot more similar. Like it's not going to snow 7 months out of the year anywhere. It's like, yeah, the Northeast and like teams from like, you know, obviously our team, Chicago, we're going to have a bit of a disadvantage at that first event. We can also just hop on a flight to Florida. You know, it's $200 for a flight. Round trip and boom, you're sunny and 75 degrees, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a benefit that you guys have. And then you guys have the Boston indoor arenas, which are pretty decent too. Big problem in Europe is mainly space to have things like this. Like paintball fields here aren't widespread. I'm lucky that we have the breakout arena over here because we got a reball dome and a full-size field, like one of those Russian Legion bubble domes things outside. We got one of those, which we can train in, you know, whole year round. But there's not a lot of people that have the luck to have this. So, you know, going back to how do you see the differences? There's that.
Yeah, that's huge because not every place is going to be at the same. Even close to the same level, just because it's so far apart, and each country is, you know, I don't know how different they all really are. I've only been to a couple European countries. You would know more than I do, but I totally get what you're saying there.
Yeah, I mean, you should if you get the chance, right? So the way it used to be, and I think I like to think it still is, when Americans came over to play in Europe, they always made like a couple of trips around. Like they came either a week before or a week after, but overstayed, and then they went and visited a couple of countries. The thing is, it's different when you're doing it as a tourist rather than as if you're actually living here, obviously. Right. And especially when it's tied to paintball, because in some countries it's harder to actually play paintball than others, Germany being one of them. I won't necessarily say it's harder in Germany, but there's a lot more rules tied to it. Some countries aren't really keen of you know, the shooty toys.
America. It's super pro-gun.
Yeah, to say the least.
Oh, yeah. All about it.
Yeah, it makes sense. But yeah, I mean, traveling, working for DLX has definitely been very, very, very interesting for me. I am very, very lucky that Tim, may he rest in peace, gave me that opportunity when he had the chance. You know,
Oh, that's awesome.
I've known – this is the thing, right? I've known him for 12 years. Like that.
Yeah.
And he used to come over to Europe like every, you know, all the time. So I guess when they were looking for somebody over here, I kind of like involuntarily got put into that position with the blessings of the necessary people.
Have you then been working with Lux for 12 years?
No. I've known Tim for 12 years. No, I've been, gotcha. I think this is my, I think third or fourth year. I got to check because I lost track. funny enough, because this is the thing, right? When you travel often, you lose track of time.
100%.
And especially if you're going to mostly the same places every year, it's like, yeah, what year was that? You know?
Right. Yeah. No, stories get wrapped up together.
I think it's the third year. So yeah. I've always been, you know, around in the European side of things, but then starting last year, I started to go over to the US, I wouldn't say on a regular basis, but like, you know, once, twice a year minimum. And then I actually gathered enough leave at my main job this year to be able to do all the US events on top of that, just working.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then now coronavirus happens, so right. I'm sitting here with like, I think 45 days of overtime that I've saved
45
up.
45 days?
Yeah. It's something like ridiculous.
A month and a half.
Yeah, absolutely. So I told my boss, I'm like, hey, so we can't travel right now, but if America stays cool, I think I might go there for like a month or something. And he was like, yeah, I mean, you got to use them sometime because you can't legally keep them over the once the year ends. You have to use all of them. So
what happens if you haven't used them all? Do they pay you or they go away?
They don't go away. So Europe's quite good on these things. Some of the paid leave days, they have to pay them out. And then some of them I lose. But
okay. And they don't want to pay them out. They'd rather you take them, so save them money.
Yeah, because the thing is, like, it's all officially noted. So they would theoretically have to pay me more because I've worked obviously more, but they obviously don't want to pay them.
Right.
So they're like, they can't really refuse any leave at this point because, I mean, 45 days is quite nuts, isn't it?
That's a lot, dude. That's a ton.
During this whole coronavirus period where everything was on lockdown, you know, considering what I do, is the people still, you know, everybody stayed at home. Everybody had stuff at home that broke. So I still had to go and visit people, obviously with the necessary safety measures.
Yeah.
But I've worked 6 out of 7 the last, I don't know, 3-4 months now, I would say. So, you know, you can do the math. It's easy.
Yeah.
And then so Europe's quite fair on those. So
what do you do for your day job? You're like some kind of engineer, right?
Yes. So, engineer in the household application branch. So I can fix anything, which is considered household application. So like a dishwasher, washing machine, induction hobs, but then I do a lot more than that, just fixing that. So our company is tied to a major group from all the German, big players in the household application area. Sorry, couldn't find the words.
No problem.
So we get the benefits of like seeing the new technology, I think 4 or 5 years before it actually becomes a thing. I get to have my opinion on it. I get to look for new solutions or just flat out say like, look, this is not going to work or this is completely useless, because I can give you an example of something that's completely useless. Controlling your dishwasher with your cell phone. This is completely useless, but it's 100% possible. I mean,
people would like that. What if you forgot to turn it on and you're leaving the house? You click it from your phone. You're good to go.
Yeah, but you still have to load your dishes into it yourself. And if you forgot to put product in it, it's still an issue. So it wouldn't, you know, if you forgot to turn it on, you probably also forgot to put product in it. So, but we're looking way beyond that. You know, like I think some dude in the factory actually managed to couple an Amazon Alexa to the home integration system. So you could literally tell, for example, like you could literally tell your dishwasher, like, look, I want you to start right now. To your Alexa, which is nice. This is, on the other hand, convenient rather than doing it from your cell phone, because it just takes more steps of doing things. You know, you have to do more actions to get the same result.
Yeah,
like I try to simplify things as much as possible. It's not like, you know, my motto is work smarter, not harder. So, you know, certain things, by the time that they, by the 4 or 5 year time span, by the time that they get released, they're already old and you can't use them anymore, or they become useless. So,
yeah, I mean, the things we design nowadays, though, it's, you know, like a lot of first world issues, like turning on your dishwasher from your cell phone, like our top scientists are working on that. Like, that's what we're solving these days. Like, you know, so it's crazy. That's the number one concern in the world, how to turn on my
luxury problems. I mean, no, I'm sure there's people, there's enough Elon Musks out there. I'm sure they're busy with other things, but this is just, you know, you kind of roll into it and this is what I do, you know.
That's awesome. Hey, I mean, you're a smart guy.
I completely understand. These are luxury problems, but there's also, like, in Europe, it's far more advanced in the terms of there's crazy isolation, like insulation laws out here that need to be respected for the Kyoto norms. So like the whole carbon footprint and all that stuff. Yeah. Like, we are super crazy on these regulations over in Europe. And in America, it's just like, oh, I'm going to drive my truck and I'm going to pump out 5 gallons, just hitting the gas.
You know? Hey, Europe, you got Tesla here too.
Yeah. I mean,
that's American made.
That's probably the greenest thing you guys have.
Yeah,
but possibly. you get my point, right? So yeah, like, we get forced to look for certain solutions, which is nice, but it also, hindsight of that, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Volkswagen emissioncy scam.
Oh yeah, huge deal.
So this is one of the problems that's coming on the backlash of this, right? So they put down emission norms that are totally not
achievable
for the current materials that we have, and then these type of things happen. So, you know, it's sometimes, I guess in the near future there might be more of these things, but yeah, I mean, European Union's not bad. It's not good either, though.
we'll have to talk about Brexit at a separate time. I'm actually gonna run out of time here. We just knocked out over an hour. I gotta go. I bought a rental property and I gotta go show tenants it at 5, and it's 6, and it's like 40 minutes away from me.
Okay.
But anyone you want to thank, sponsors, things like that?
You know what? I'm gonna give a special thanks to Tim, you know, because Tim really deserves that. I don't necessarily want to thank any specific sponsors. Everybody knows who they are, especially for the Droogs. There's a couple of people like Mario and Jenny that put a lot of time in this. They spent hours and hours of their private time to make this into what it is. And then Tim's helped us along the way, and myself in specific, to you know, become who we really are. So I'd like to thank those people. I think they deserve that.
Yeah,
and it's not as meaningless as going down the whole list of standard sponsors and calling them out.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we just scratched the surface. I feel like we could keep rolling. Unfortunately, you know, got a bit of a time constraint. It's 9 p.m., 10 p.m. where you are?
Yeah, a little bit past 10.
Yeah, I'm sure you got to go to sleep too. So, but dude, thanks for coming on. I had a great time talking with you. And... Okay. That's all, folks. Thanks for listening.